Good evening, everybody. My name is Rob Sipple. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Sober surely by the grace of a loving God, the power that I found as the result of the program in the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous. The awakened members of the Sacred Fellowship who led me to and through this program and continue to guide me today in the service of God leads me to, and I'm allowed and encouraged to participate in and by a host of teachers in my life. I've been moved from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body to that state that I currently experience today at this moment as recovered, free, able to consistently see the truth. And I want to thank the group for having me, for your kind invitation, and for hosting me and having me and tolerating me for the past 5 and now 6 weeks. I hope I've been able to bring some level of understanding to our basic text to you. If you've had half as much fun as I've had during the past 6 weeks, well then I've had twice as much fun as you have had. So that's new math. And what we've been looking at over the past 6 weeks is how to take a newcomer through this process as rapidly and quickly as the early members did, in as few visits or as short a time as possible. And up until this point, we've arrived squarely at the through the ninth step. A rapid and quick qualification on the very first visit, and allowing them to come to the consideration, or the concession rather, that they lack power. Move them in toward a consideration that they need to find power. How and where to find that power is certainly the beginning of the chapters of this book. And then to move them toward a decision. Within the first 1 to 2 visits after that, we get to work and start writing inventory. Fifth step, sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth, as we've gotten through so far. All of that within a matter of days. Which, as we finished up last week, I talked about, brings me from that state of hopelessness and desperation, newly separated from the substance, and or perhaps separated from the substance for a period of time and still suffering from the all of the devilments, which we find on page 52. When I go through this process of spiritual awakening, I'm brought to the results that we find on page 83 and 84, our nine-step promises. Excuse me. And preceding that, it tells me that the spiritual life is not a theory. I have to live it. Again, a requirement. I have to live it until my life becomes full and aware of the consciousness of the power of God and at work in and through my life and the lives of others. And then my attitude changes to a point where I get to live this on a daily basis. And our founders were certainly aware of the need to continue on a daily basis. Which brings us to page 84, and the middle of the page where it tells me, this thought, and what is the thought that brings me? That that these results are, we assure you, are not extravagant in any way, shape, or form. They are fulfilled among us sometimes quickly, as in terms of a spiritual experience, a rapid coming to God, a rapid change in my personality and thinking sufficient to recover, or sometimes slowly, as in terms of a spiritual awakening. Again, as with most things in sobriety, time is irrelevant. Whether it happens quickly or slowly doesn't matter. When God shows up, God shows up. When I'm aware of the power of God at work in and through my life, that's the awakening, that's the experience. Doesn't matter exactly when. What does matter is all the time references that I've been given to this, as now, immediately, next. And that continues on with step 10. Again, it gives me time references. And it tells me that I have to keep on keeping on. It tells me to continue. And to continue and to continue and to continue. Continue to take personal inventory and to continue to set right any new mistakes as I go along. It says that I vigorously commence this way of living as I cleaned up the past. I have entered the world of the Spirit. My next function is to grow, not maintain, but to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter, for it should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When, not if, but when these crop up, I ask God at once to remove them. I discuss them with someone immediately, and I make amends quickly if I have harmed anyone. Then I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Love and tolerance of others is my code. instructions, clear-cut, precise, and detailed, as always, with all of our steps. Oftentimes, we hear about steps 10, 11, and 12 as being described as the maintenance steps. It's impossible for me to maintain my spiritual condition. Simply stated, I'm either growing or going. If I'm not moving forward, growing and understanding effectiveness, I'm going back to the dark side. Remember, earlier on in our literature, it tells me that I have but two alternatives: to blot out my existence as best I can, and the other is to seek spiritual help. Well, I get to continue to seek spiritual help on a daily basis. Maintain, by definition, is to keep as is. My spiritual condition is not going to be able to maintain as is. I'm always going to, as I engage in this on a daily basis, I'm going to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And that's what it tells me I get to do. It tells me I need to set right any mistakes as I go along. Surely I've made some progress in cleaning up the wreckage of the past, and I've been more aware and now being able to be a watcher of my thinking mind, being mindful of my mind, and seeing, you know, where it can still be selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate, and the defects can still show up in my, and will show up in my life. I have not been struck perfect. I'm now aware, simply aware, of my brokenness. And it is in that brokenness that I get to grow. The value of what we learn in 6 and 7 is in my brokenness is where I grow. You know, as Joseph Campbell so well said, wherever I stumble and fall is the place where I will find gold. It isn't my falling down and getting back up, but recognizing why I fell and what the mistakes were that I made, that I get to learn that lesson. So I'm going to make mistakes as I go through the day. I vigorously commence, and again, this is a step that I get to do in and through the day. In the 12 and 12, it talks about, you know, doing a 10-step, you know, at night. In our basic text, this is what allows me to go in and through the day, certainly coupled with the contemplation and meditation that we'll come to in 11 in a few moments. And I need something that I can live in and through the day with. You know, and if I'm not getting right with God, you know, and myself and my thinking mind and the world and its people early in the morning, and I just rush off out into the world, and all of a sudden I'm caught up in traffic, and then I get to the job site, and something isn't right there, and before I know it, you know, I'm getting phone calls that I don't like, and you know, by noontime I could be out there, you know, thinking, you know, considering getting a gun license and more, as opposed to being able to deal with this as it shows up, as it comes, and I get to correct it in and through the, not just in and through the day, but moment by moment by moment. It tells me that I've entered the world of the Spirit. There's the implication that there's much more for me to grow, a greater distance for me to travel. And then it tells me what my next function is. It is to grow, not maintain, but to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. Again, a timeline. It must continue for my lifetime. What is my lifetime? Today. Today and today and today and today. I get to continue this. I get to live in the moment. I'm no longer running from the past because I've cleaned up the wreckage of the past. I'm no longer living in fear because I've been set right with the world and its people. So I get to live in the moment. And then it continues to give me, again, my instructions. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And I know how to do that because I've done a 4-step. And I know how to, you know, who do I resent? Where am I, you know, who do I fear? What have they done? What's the situation? How does it affect me? What's my part? Where's my thinking taking me in the wrong direction? When, again, not if, but when these crop up, I ask God at once to remove them. And I know now that I can immediately turn to God, as I do in 6 and 7, to ask God to remove them and to give me the strength and the willingness to move in the opposite direction. I discuss them with someone immediately, if possible. You know, I'm not always... okay, yes, we do have instant communications with our cell phones all the time, but I don't necessarily always need to be calling someone in the network, you know, throughout the day. as I grow an understanding of effectiveness, sometimes I can just bounce it off someone else when I'm around. They don't necessarily need to be in a 12-step fellowship for them to tell me that I'm being a jerk, but for them to understand that I'm just being a, you know, an idiot at any given point. I discuss them with someone immediately and then make amends quickly if I have harmed anyone. I see what, you know, by going through the simple process that I've already learned how to do in steps 4 through 9, I can see my part, I know how to correct it, I make a sincere apology, I correct whatever actions I've done, and I set the you know, my life straight at that point, and I move forward. Then I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. This book has always told me and pointed out that my real purpose in life is to be helpful, to be useful. Not to drink, but to be useful to others. So I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Love and tolerance of others is my code. Not just a suggestion, not just a good idea, but a code. A code that I must and get to live by. And if I do this, and I will challenge you to do this in and through the day for the next 30 days, and you will not be the same person that you were 30 days from, you know, you will not be the same person 30 days hence than you are today. If you continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, ask God to remove it when they crop up, straighten it out on an ongoing basis, and certainly coupled with what we'll talk about in 10, 11, and 12, you will be different. You will have grown in understanding and effectiveness. I will have grown in understanding and effectiveness with my thinking mind. I will have grown in understanding and effectiveness with my relationship with God. And I will have grown in understanding and effectiveness with the world and its people by cleaning up the wreckage of the present. By turning to God in prayer, I'll grow in understanding and effectiveness with God. And by continuing to watch for selfish dishonesty, resentment, and fear, I will have grown in understanding and effectiveness with my thinking mind. It is impossible for me to stay the same when I engage in this step on a daily basis. It's impossible. And what happens as a result of what I have done so far, as with all the other steps, I'll be given results. Guaranteed results when I take the actions or our promises. And the next paragraph is going to give us our 10th step promises. And I've ceased fighting anything or anyone. Oh yeah, by the way, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. The ability to see the truth, not just about the first drink, but more importantly about my defective thinking. I will seldom be interested in liquor. And if tempted, I recoil from it as if from a hot flame. Remember, alcohol is but a symptom. We needed to get down to my causes and conditions. When I get down to my causes and conditions, I can see the truth that the alcohol is just a false solution. And I'm no longer turning to a false solution because I now have a solution. The power of God at work in and through my life and the lives of others. And so what do? I react sanely and normally. How about that? You know? I get to be a part of life at last. I get to be, yes, a normal human being. Still perfectly imperfect, broken in all so many ways. But I get to react sanely and normally. And I will find that this has happened automatically. My new attitude toward liquor has been given me without any thought or effort. It has been gifted to me. It just comes. There's the miracle. I'm not fighting it. Neither am I avoiding temptation. I'm not watching my triggers. I'm not looking over my shoulder. I'm just walking forward into life. How cool is that? I'm not fighting, neither am I avoiding temptation. I've been placed in a position of neutrality. I am safe and protected. When booze was my friend, or so I thought, that's what this used to do for me. It kept me safe and protected. It kept me walled off and blocked off from you. Once it was no longer my friend, it kept me still isolated. But now, I'm in a position of neutrality, and I'm safe and protected in the loving hands of God. I don't have to swear off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. I have recovered from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. This statement is said, and I state it as humbly as well. And to state it, and to not state that I'm a recovered alcoholic would be to deny the power of God at work in and through my life. And the only thing that removed this problem was the power of God. Why would we not want to shout this from the high tops of wherever? But there is a condition. This is how I react so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. How do I keep in fit spiritual condition? To continue to wash yourself with dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Rinse and repeat. Keep on doing what I'm doing. And so if these things have become a part of my life, then I've become one of the we's in this book. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I'm not a perfect human being. I will continue to fall short, continue to make mistakes, but now I have a way out and a way up. A way out of my brokenness through continuing falling down and getting back up and falling down and getting back up and learning the lesson that the universe gives me with every single day. And I get to pray my way through each of those opportunities to grow in understanding the fact of this. And then it tells me to be mindful and to be careful, because it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on my laurels. What are my laurels? Everything that I've done up until this point. Yesterday's prayer and meditation. Yesterday's meeting. Yesterday's 12-step work. The simplest way I can state it is, I never got drunk on yesterday's booze. I always needed to have a fresh supply today. So too in the spiritual realm. I'm headed for trouble if I do rest on my laurels, for alcohol is a subtle foe. I'm not cured of alcoholism. I go to my grave still suffering from the allergy of the body. But if I'm consistently able to see the truth about the first drink and the defective thinking that precedes that, I would no longer ingest an alcohol than I would any other poison, gasoline or bleach or anything else. What I really have is a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And there's that term, maintenance. But what I really have is a daily reprieve. And a reprieve is what? It's a postponement of a death sentence. A postponement of a death sentence, because alcoholism to me is a death sentence. But no longer living in the past or the future and living in the present, I get a daily reprieve. And later on in the Al-Anon chapter, it talks about we learn to live our lives one day at a time. It doesn't, nowhere in this book does it tell me that I learn, I just don't drink one day at a time. It tells me that I learn to live my life one day at a time. And this is certainly a clear-cut path of how I can live in and through the day. And then more instructions. Every day is a day when I must carry the vision of God's will into all of my activities. Do I have a vision of what God's will is? Have I written it down? Do I strive to meet it on a daily basis? How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. More prayer. And then again, this is a thought which must go with me constantly. Constantly. Not when it's convenient. Constantly. I can exercise my willpower along this line. All I wish is the proper use of will. Sanity has been returned. In the third step, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. In step two, I sought a power that would restore me to sanity. Sanity has been restored. I gave my will and my life over to the care of God, and here my will is returned. I can properly use my thinking. I don't understand why, in those little framed slogans that you see in some meetings, and the think is always upside down. Well, when I'm restored to sanity, and I have this, and I have this awakening of spirit, a spiritual experience, I can think properly. God, it's a God-given mind. Use it properly and turn it in. Post it back upside, right side up. So now I get to live in the day. And then all of this process has been a prayer process. From that first cry of help and seeking God in step one and two, to making a decision in the third step prayer, and then praying on, in the fourth step for a change in my thinking and a different attitude toward others, a prayer to be able to see the truth in step five, the prayers of change in six and seven, all the prayers that have gone in eight and nine, and now in through the day. And so now, much has been already said about receiving strength inspiration and direction from God, who has all knowledge and power. If I have carefully followed directions, I have begun. Again, I'm just at the beginning. I've entered the world of the Spirit to sense the flow of God's Spirit into me. To some extent, I am God conscious. I have begun. Again, I'm always here at the beginning, and I need to always hold a beginner's mind toward this, to develop the vital sixth sense. But I must go further, and that means more action. Step 11, prayer meditation. And I do hold close to my heart the line in the 12 and 12 where it says, self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Let me pull it up and give it to you exactly. When taken separately, can give much benefit and... There's a direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Taken separately, this practice can bring much relief and benefit. But when they are logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. That's what this process of living in and through the day with 10 and prayer and meditation in 11 provides me. An unshakable foundation for life. And then it starts off with when I retire at night. And I mentioned earlier on how when I take someone through this process, and by the time we finish their fifth step, we turn the page and we go through six and seven. We make the initial outline of the eight-step list, and we talk briefly about the how to go through the man's process. And then I give them the instructions for 10 to live in through the day. And then I go through these pages of 86, 87, and 88, so that by the time they return home, they're ready to retire at night with these instructions. And it tells me that I need to constructively review my day, not beat myself up, because I was always really good at that. And then the questions that it asked me, was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do I owe an apology? Have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another person at once? It says when I retire at night. Doesn't necessarily mean just before I put my head to pillow. I find your own time is convenient when you can get quiet, maybe earlier in the evening. Oftentimes when I'm working with a newcomer, I'll have them do this at some point, in the 7, 8, 9 o'clock range, and then have them call me up, and we'll go through an 11-step nightly review together. Good for me, good for them. Gets them in the habit of answering these questions and reviewing their day, and we can bounce stuff back and forth. And it also establishes a habit and a pattern. And until I know that they're on their own and doing it on a regular basis. Was it something I should have discussed with another person at once? Again, I might not necessarily, if I go to bed late, noon, midnight or something like that, and the person who I'm consulting with happens to go to bed at 10, I don't want to be calling them up at midnight and say, I better talk to you. Otherwise they won't be answering the phone for too long. Another question, was I kind and loving toward all? No. What could I have done better? There's always something I could have done better. But I need to constructively look at this, to be patient about my improvement. Was I thinking of myself most of the time? Of course I was. Or was I thinking of what I could do for others? Again, this is something that I move toward. But I must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Again, a caution about beating myself up and being negative about this. This is a humbling process, but not a humiliating process. I need to constructively review my day to see where I have mixed my successes and failures. What can I learn from this so that I can do better the next day? After making my review, I ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. And by the time I've done that, I can put my head to pillow and rest calmly and peacefully. The day is done. I've set matters straight. I've lived in the day. What more need I do? Rest. And then, on awakening, Let me think about the 24 hours ahead. I consider my plans for the day. Before I begin, I ask God to direct my thinking. Prayer. You know, as I always said, when I consider my plans for the day, I don't so much on awakening think about what I have to do on a daily basis. I know what I have to do on a daily basis, and when I and these days I make a list of what I have to do on a daily basis, and when I remember where I put that list, then I'm in really good shape. But when I awaken in the morning with that first conscious thought of the day, the first conscious thought these days is always one of gratitude. But gratitude defined as acknowledging the benefits that I've received and being willing to repay them in kind. With that first conscious thought of gratitude, I set myself up to owe. Gratitude is not some list. Gratitude requires action. Gratitude sets me up to take further action as I go in and through the day. Gratitude to those who have led me to this point so far. Gratitude to those that I get to share this life with, whatever it is that I need to show up for others. So on awakening, with that conscious thought, first conscious thought of gratitude, these days I ask the Divine, not so much what do I have to do, but what would you have me be? And when I spend time in contemplation and quiet time, what would you have me be? And the guidance that I received this morning was similar to what I received yesterday and the day before that, and I suspect if I'm blessed with tomorrow's morning, it's going to be as similar as what I received today. It's as simple as be kind, be patient, be tolerant, be more understanding, a little more gracious. Be more courageous, have more faith. Be more giving. How can you be less fearful and more useful? And so again, with that guidance, I get up and I go about my day, and then I get to go out into the world and be tested with that. Because if I'm going to pray for patience and tolerance, then you're going to show up in my world annoying. I'm going to go off to the job site, and as I always say, I'll be driving down the road, and someone has the unmitigated goal to be driving in front of me and doing 25 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour zone, and I'm running late. Don't they know? Where does my spiritual condition look like then? Am I ready to salute them, or do I thank them for allowing me to live within the guidance of the state and the laws of the road, and teaching me the lesson that I need to leave a little bit earlier the next day? So I ask God to direct my thinking, asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, I can use my mental faculties with assurance, for God gave me brains to use. My thought life has been placed on a much higher plane when I'm cleared of wrong motives. I spend time, prior to meditation, in some set prayers. I always engage in the third set prayer, generally to open some personal prayers that I offer. If there's people that I'm having difficulty with, or I know that are having tough times in their life, or individuals that I'm working with, I pray for them. Pray for their health, their happiness, their well-being, everything that I want for myself to be given to them. People that I'm having difficulty with, I pray that my attitude be changed toward them. All of the information and process that I've already learned in steps 4 through 9. So I spend time in prayer like that. I conclude with a 9-step prayer, so that as I go out from here, I'm ready to do God's bidding. This book, again, continues to give me clear-cut instructions on what to do when I face indecision. How to trust the intuitive, the thought or action. When not to trust the intuitive thought or action, if I'm still inexperienced, and where to seek guidance as necessary. And to trust that nevertheless that my thinking will, as time passes, be more and more placed on the plane of inspiration, and I will come to rely upon it. And then again, it tells me to pray that I be shown all through the day what my next step is to be, in reliance upon God. There's a suggestion here about praying for others, with others rather, excuse me, in a morning meditation or following religious practices if you're so associated. What to do when I'm agitated or doubtful? I pause. That was a pause. It's as simple as it takes. Just a momentary, again, when a thought comes to mind, I stop. I pause. This is like, oh wow, this is new information. No, it's not. How many times when we were little kids were we told count to 10? It's the same stuff. We just didn't listen back then. We listened, but I'm a big grown-up. I don't have to count to 10 anymore. Well, I have to count to 10 a lot more now. But that's what I get to do. Count to 10. There's a pause. It's not new stuff. It's the old kindergarten stuff. Oh, my God. And I need to constantly remind myself that I am no longer running this show. Humbly saying to myself many times each day, Thy will, God, not mine be done. And then the 11th step promises that I am then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. I become much more efficient. I do not tire so easily, for I'm not burning up energy foolishly as I once did when I was trying to arrange life to suit myself. I've become part of the flow. And when I'm, it's, again, the old, come back to a nursery rhyme. Row, row, row your boat. Gently down the stream. Not against the current, but with the stream. And gently. And then I get to live merrily, merrily, merrily. And life is but a dream. The shortest and perhaps most profound paragraph in this book. It works. It really does. Four words of promise on page 25 was there is a solution. I can put that solution into my life and I get this result. It works. It really does. But again, it tells me another truth about myself, that I am undisciplined. And so I let God discipline me in a simple fashion that we have just outlined, in the actions of 10 and 11. In and through the day, I get to ask God to guide me, to discipline me, to show me my brokenness, help me to begin to move away from that and into a more helpful and useful situation in a way of life. And the most effective way that I can do that, particularly within this fellowship, is by being useful to someone else. And again, my entire purpose, again, is not to stop drinking, but to be able to be useful to someone else. And the simple process is to show someone else how to show someone else, how to show someone else how to recover from alcoholism. A simple statement. If you want to learn something, teach it. I've gone through this process. I've had an awakening of the Spirit. Go and show someone else how to do this, and you'll deepen and broaden your understanding of the effectiveness of this process. And what happens is practical experience shows nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with alcoholics. So the question is, how intensely do I work with alcoholics? Am I part of the crowd that shows up in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and someone raises their hands and says, I'm new or I'm coming back, and then the meeting book gets passed around and I just write my phone number on and expect them to call me someday? I was having this conversation with someone. I don't know anybody who was given one of those books, the meeting books with all the names on the back, that ever called anybody on that list. I know I never did. How intensely do I work with another alcoholic? If someone raises their hand and says, I'm new or I'm coming back or whatnot, I walk to them and I said, are you ready? Do you want to quit drinking for good and for all? And what's your phone number? And then I'll ask their name. And are you ready to get going? And based upon their answer, then we do something. I make it, you know, I make a date to, you know, I make sure they have a copy of this book, and I make a date to start going through it with them. Generally, the next day, second day, you know, at best, 2 days later, if not directly after the meeting. And oftentimes, I try to do that as quickly as possible, and I qualify people, you know, in the hour after the meeting, and at least give them some understanding of what it means to be an alcoholic, and give them some hope that there is a way out. And that's exactly what this next chapter, Working with Others, explains how to do. Now, our 12th step. Having had another guaranteed, you know, promise, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of this course of action. Well, that was how it was originally written. Having had a spiritual experience as the result of this course of action. But a promise. We try to carry this message to others, especially alcoholics, and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. So three parts of the step. A, I've had an experience or an awakening. I get to carry this message to others. Thank you. I couldn't even hear my own self. and then I get to practice these principles in all of my affairs, in and through the day. Which will bring me back again always to in the eternal loop back to 10 and 11. Carry this message. What is the message I carry? Do I carry a message of hope and recovery through a spiritual experience as the result of our 12 steps? Or am I carrying a message of just don't drink and go to another meeting? Am I able to help when no one else can? Have I armed myself properly with the facts about myself so that I can generally win the confidence of another alcoholic within, you know, perhaps a few hours? As told me earlier on in chapter 2. I can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember that they are very, very ill. But again, results that are given to us. Life will take on new meaning. I've seen people recover. I've seen them turn around and help others. I've seen loneliness vanish, both in my life and the lives of others. I've seen a fellowship grow up about me and around so many others. I have a host of friends. I've seen individuals recover, and I've seen families reunited and seen others recover. This is an experience you must not miss. Why would I want to miss this? I'm a part of life at last. Frequent newcomer contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. I'll throw myself under the bus here. At one point, several years ago, I don't know what I was thinking, but I was on this quick quest to find some AA meeting where we were only talking about God and spirituality and all of this stuff, and not about, you know, not drinking one day at a time and all of this. And then suddenly I realized that if I was looking for that, you know, just where a bunch of people were all recovered and everything was going to be, you know, and they were just growing in that. I realized that wouldn't have been a very healthy group. And what we really need is that newcomer every single day who's struggling, and that newcomer that can't understand why we can be all happy, joyous, and free, and never annoyed us for that, you know. But they still want us at the same time, you know. And why I need that newcomer more than they need me. They're our purpose for our existence. So what do I do with them? As I've talked about in the past 5 weeks, I take them through this as rapidly and quickly as possible. I qualify them. And again, it spells that out very clearly in this chapter. When you discover a prospect of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 90, find out what you can about him. You know, make a friend. They should, you know, be patient with them, realizing that they're dealing with a sick person. It tells me later on page 90 that I should be described to them as a member of a fellowship as part of my recovery. I try to help others and would be glad to talk to him if he cares. I should be introduced to him as one who has recovered. Don't force myself on him. Again, there's all sorts of cautions and good advice. In the early days, you know, particularly coming from the Oxford group, they had their five C's, you know, confidence, gain the confidence of the newcomer. get them to confession. You know, talk about, you know, not just the troubles that they've had, but, you know, what brought about their basically enforce that conviction. Move them toward a place where they can begin to believe. Conversion, going through this process where they begin to have faith, and then continuance. Again, to turn around and show them that they can show someone else how to do this. Confidence, confession, conviction, conversion, and continuance. And again, that's the whole process of what we go through. Gain the confidence, qualify them, show them the, you know, the simplicity of this process. Don't make it frightening. Tell them it's not simple but not easy. That's what Bill Wilson told me. Simple but not easy. A price has to be paid. Yes. What's the price? The destruction of all things self-centered. So what? I get through this and I gain a whole new way of living. I just can't see that at the time. You know, tell me what to do. See your man alone if possible. Tell him some of your stories. Get him to talk about himself. Gain his confidence. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, on page 92, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition, again, talking about, you know, I've already qualified him with the allergy of the body. Fill him in with the obsession of the mind, the queer mental blank spot. Surrendering the first drink prevents the normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book unless he's seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him an alcoholic, let him draw his own conclusions. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, all right. If you're not done, you're not done. Go get done. I don't try to convince anyone that they can't drink. I don't tell anyone not to drink. I don't have the power myself not to drink. I don't expect them not to drink. I expect them that if they want a different way of life, that they will do what we've done. And when you do what we have done, then that problem disappears. The problem is removed. It no longer exists. Speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the condition of mind and body. Can I rapidly and quickly explain about the allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind, and the malady of spirit? I've done it several times throughout this workshop, and hopefully you can as well. Do I offer the solution or power of God or not? It tells me on page 93 to stress the spiritual feature freely. If our solution is God, why would I, and I need to offer them a solution, why would I not talk to them about God? But it's how I talk to them about that makes all the difference. If I'm just wagging my finger at them and telling them, you know, coming from a structured, or from a particular faith-based point of view, that's not what we offer. I need to stress the spiritual feature freely, helping them to move aside their old ideas, their old prejudices, their old conceptions, and to see, help them begin to see what will work in their lives. Are they at least willing to come up with a conception, no matter how inadequate it might be, and be willing to move toward that? Have I firmly, you know, aware of how in the agnostic it takes me from a place of belief to a place of at least being willing to believe and then a place of beginning to understand? Can I get them to believe that deep down inside every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea and help them to begin to come up with their own conception? The main thing is that he'd be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, and that he'd be willing to live by spiritual principles. And if we've done that, then that's a good first visit. And it tells me if my talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, I have perhaps made a friend. Maybe I have disturbed him on the question of alcoholism. That is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. You know? Can I disturb someone on the subject of alcoholism? You know, sometimes when I think of my place or position or role or sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's to comfort the afflicted to afflict the comfortable. And so I don't care if I'm going to disturb, you know, my job is to disturb them, to rile them up and get them to look at something from a different point of view. I have to be ready to counter the objections. What's your objection to it? Oh, okay. You believe in punishing your judgmental God. You don't believe in God at all. But, you know, okay. We'll move through that question by question by question by question. Remember, it's exactly what Emmy did at the kitchen table at 182 Clinton Street. You know, but he did no ranting. In a simple, matter-of-fact way, he talked about how he had had his own conversion experience through the Oxford group, and that moved Bill to a place where he could begin to have, where he melted the icy intellectual mountains that had blocked him off. And Bill was drunk at the time. Bill was drunk when he made his second step consideration. And that's all I'm trying to do at this point, is to move them toward a place where they can make their second step consideration. And then on page 96, suppose now you are making your second visit, not taking them to their 12th meeting, not, you know, waiting until they get comfortable. If I wait until I get comfortable, I'm never going to get better. Because separation from the bottle makes me distinctly uncomfortable. And I know that wasn't true in my life, and I've seen it over and over and over again. The more, you know, the farther away I am from a drink, the more uncomfortable I get, as with any other alcoholic. So if I ever hope to be comfortable, then I have to find and grab a hold of that solution that will take me to that place of comfort, which is spiritual. Suppose I'm on my second visit to the man, and he has read this volume and says he's prepared to go through the 12 steps. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready. Time period. Reference. Having had the experience yourself, we can give much practical advice. We get down on our knees, we make the third step decision, and we pick up pen and paper and start writing as we've gone through. So again, this is exactly what I do in and as quickly as possible. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. And then it tells me also on page 100, again, some more things that I have to do. Both I and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If I persist, remarkable things will happen. When I look back, I realize that things which came to me when I put myself in God's hands were better than anything I could have planned. Direction. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and I will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what my present circumstances. I get to live presently, regardless of the circumstances around me. I've already seen that alcoholism is not circumstantial. It's physical, mental, and spiritual. Circumstances don't matter. When I'm placed into a spiritual way of living, I get to live presently. And my circumstances don't matter. They just become more opportunities for me to grow an understanding and effectiveness. And so I get to live freely. So where does that take me? By the time we've gone through this and they've retired at night and the newcomer has gone through their fourth step and making it, you know, out making their amends, they're delivering 10 and 11 on a daily basis, then my job then is to, you know, multifold. But my job then is to find someone else for them to work with, find a newcomer for them to take through this process, and to guide them through that, and to hold their hand, walk side by side as they take someone through this process. Simultaneously, it's my responsibility then to guide them through our traditions so that they can, you know, be aware of how their role is and how they can fit and grow into our fellowship. And then also to begin to show them the concepts of service so that they can show up and be useful. And where does that leave me? Relatively happy, joyous, and free. And so I grow. Though I be but one man with this book in hand, our early members told us, and I now know it to be true, that we believe and hope it contains all you need to begin toward the end of this textbook, it tells me once again, I'm at a beginning point. I'm always at a beginning point. So if I'm at a beginning point, what do? This book is meant to be suggestive only. I now realize that I know only a little. I have to trust that God will constantly disclose more to me and to you, and I need to listen. If it's going to be disclosed, I have to be open to that. And I have to seek. Ask God in my morning meditation what I can do each day for the man who is still sick. Each day. If I'm not doing my morning meditation each day, how can I ask? The answers will come. Yeah. I'm often, sometimes newcomers or even people who've been around for a while say, well, you know, I have a hard time doing this morning meditation or praying in through the day and all of that stuff. You know, it's just a hard habit for me to live by and develop. I'm always too busy. Well, I'm going to be a little graphic here. But ever since I've been potty trained, which was well more than a half a century ago, I've never sat down on the toilet to do number two and not finish the job by cleaning myself up. It's just part of the job, you know? Every day is a day when I must carry the vision of God's will into all of my activities. This is what I have to do. This is what I get to do. You know, ask God in my morning meditation each day what I can do for the man who's still sick. In step nine, it tells me, okay, you know, ask God to show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. If I'm not doing this, then I'm not doing it. Why don't I want to do this? I get to grow in understanding with this God that saved me. This God that removed this problem of alcoholism and provided me with more opportunities, with more lessons every single day to grow in understanding effectiveness with the world, with my thinking mind, and with this power of God. The answers will come, promise, if my own house is in order. If I'm doing 10 and 11 on a daily basis and continuing on a regular review in depth, then my own house will be in order. But obviously I cannot transmit something I haven't got, so my marching orders, see to it. See to it that my relationship with God is right, and then what do I get? Great events will come to pass for me and countless others. I get to be a part of something much bigger than I ever thought I'd ever be a part of. This is my great fact. What is our great fact? The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we've had a deep and effective spiritual experience and has revolutionized my whole attitude toward life, toward my fellow, and toward God's universe. Page 25. And here it shows up again. Is that my great fact or not? If it is, great, deepen and broaden it. If it's not, then I need to work toward it. How do I do that? Abandon myself to God as I understand God. And I do that in steps 1, 2, and 3. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. 4 and 5. Clear away the records of your past. 6, 7, 8, and 9. Give freely what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. Steps 10, 11, and 12. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless and keep you until then. Thank you again so very much for all your time and patience over the past several weeks. And we will open it up to gentle questions and kind comments. Thank you very much. And I will...